This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. As always, I am your host, Shane Told, and this podcast is all about me talking to other lead singers about what it's like to be the front man or front woman of a professional touring rock band. Right now, I'm on tour in Europe with Silverstein, just having the best time. We decided on this tour we were going to spend a lot more time, you know, actually seeing stuff, going to some landmarks, checking out some beaches, you know, whatever there is to do in some of these amazing cities. It's amazing, you know, like you tour all over the world like I do, and it's amazing how little time you really have just with things like the sound check and meet and greets and signings and even the show itself, how much time that takes up, and it doesn't really leave you with much time, you know, to see the cities. So we decided we'll get up early. I mean, the weather's beautiful here in the summer. You know, we tour Europe so much in the wintertime, and the weather sucks, and you don't really see anything. It's dark early and everything. So this time, we've really, really made it a point to check out some things, and we've just been having the best time. Another awesome thing over here in Europe right now is it's festival season. So we're here doing a bunch of festivals on the weekends, and we run into so many of our old friends, you know, bands we've toured with before. And one of these bands is Being as an Ocean. Now, amazingly, we just toured with them for 6 weeks, and I was trying to get together with Joel to do the podcast, and it didn't happen. So how random is it that we were able to do the podcast in person while on tour in Europe in Lindau, Germany? Do you not know where Lindau, Germany is? You probably don't, because a lot of people, even German people, don't know where it is. It's actually a beautiful little city tucked away right on the corner of the border of Germany, Austria, and Switzerland, and it overlooks this beautiful lake. It is just an amazing place. So we sat down in a courtyard. There's a lot of birds chirping. There's some people playing ping pong. You can hear it in the background, but we had a very real and very honest conversation, and it one of my favorite podcasts to date, and Joel is just an incredible person. Before we jump in, I want to make sure you guys know how to get in touch. Real simple. Email address, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. Also, Snapchat. Big, it's real big right now. If you guys don't have a Snapchat, go get one. I'm on there, Real Shane Told. Also, I'm on Twitter, @LeadSingerSyn, S-Y-N, Instagram, @LeadSingerSyndrome. And as always, if you hate my guts, if you hate the show, give me the hate. I love the hate. Call 657-666-HATE, H-A-T-E. You can leave a message. And as I always say, we will roll out some hate line clips one of these days. Also, if you want to support the show, if you buy things online, if you use Amazon, please use our affiliate link. Again, real easy. If you're going to buy anything on your computer, just go to leadsingersyndrome.com/Amazon. It takes you right to the Amazon homepage, login as normal, and anything you buy, we get 4%. It all adds up, it all makes a difference, and it goes a long way to paying for some of the costs associated with the show. Also, before we jump in, if you like the show, please just tell a friend. Tell a friend, tell your brother, tell your sister, whatever. Anybody that's into music that wants to hear, you know, passionate conversations about this stuff. A lot of this stuff is never talked about. A lot of this stuff is talked about only in the backstage dressing rooms after a show, after a half dozen beers. So I think this is a special show. I'm really enjoying doing it. If you're enjoying it, please just let's help spread the word. Let's grow this thing. Let's make this thing just even bigger. And the sky's the limit. I really, really believe it. So thanks again, everybody, for the support. We're about 6 months in now. It's just been amazing. So thank you very much. Here it is, episode 35 with Joel Quartuccio of Being as an Ocean.
Trust.
baby.
What up?
How you doing, man?
I'm good.
I'm here with Joel. How do you say your last name?
Cortuccio.
That's a lot of letters.
Yeah. Ten letters.
Yes.
Make a hard sound.
Was that difficult for you to learn to spell when you were a little kid?
It was funny because I learned it right around the same time I learned my home phone number. Just like listening to my mom say it over the phone to everyone.
Right.
You know, Q-U-A-R-T-U-C-C-I-O.
Like, exactly.
So.
Yeah, I bet that's the kind of thing where like every trophy in your house has like a different
sort of
version of the spelling of the name.
Yeah. C-O-R-T-U-C-C-I-O.
That's great, man. No, we're here in together in Lindau, Germany.
And it's beautiful.
On tour together here in Europe. And it is beautiful. We're sitting in this courtyard. I think the people will hear the birds chirping. They're
probably
quite loud.
Yeah.
Which is fine. Yeah, so how's the European run been for you guys?
Good so far. It's awesome that we get to meet back up, play these few shows together.
Yeah.
But yeah, everything else has been incredible. Did a few UK shows before coming over to mainland Europe, and then all the little festivals and, well, not little. They're not little festivals.
No, they're not little.
they're quite the production, but... Yeah, doing the festival runs and then meeting up with some other bands we toured before and stuff like that. So
cool.
We're looking forward to it.
Cool, yeah. It's like it's kind of interesting, you know, like I feel like, I guess we can jump in with this because it's something I always wanted to ask you. Like being as an Ocean, like you won the APMA for Best Underground Band.
Sure.
Which is like such a, it's such an ironic thing to win an APMA.
Yeah. To be recognized for being underground.
For being an underground band.
Yeah,
by
sure.
A mainstream like publication.
Yeah.
And like, I feel like that's sort of an accurate way your band sort of fits into all this.
Oh, cool. Thank
to
you.
To where like, you know, you have this underground vibe and mentality and like, you have a lot of, you have a very like hardcore fan base that kind of doesn't want the rest of the world to know about you in
sure,
a way.
Sure.
But then at the same time, you know, you guys are over here in Europe doing some of these mainstream, you know, festivals.
Sure.
So I always like kind of wonder, as you know, you being so immersed in it as the singer of the band, like, do you really understand what the perception of your band is? And is that something that you guys think about or care about?
Honestly, I think it all kind of just started out of the way we've always tried to play shows. And, you know, just like any other band, you know, starting out playing, you know, to anywhere from like 0 to 20 people.
Yeah.
And just like, going out in a conversion 8-seater van and with a hope and a prayer, no money, and just hoping to make it to the next venue type thing. And then just trying to, play every show like it's our last. And I think that's kind of, just carried through in our mentality, and it's what's made us, I think continue to really enjoy, every show. And you know, try to make it, you know, different or interactive, or that was always a huge thing too. It's like, I spend a lot of time in the crowd.
Yeah, I noticed.
And that
a lot. I'd say a majority.
Yeah, I like to run around. And I think that kind of came from that environment too.
Right.
It was like where I had to like, you know, get 20 people who had never heard of us before ever like into our band immediately.
Yes.
And I remember going to shows as a kid and you know, just something to do. See my friends, and then the bands that really like captured my attention were the ones that like did weird shit on stage, or like, you know, like ran around the crowd, you know, like tussled people's hair, like got in their space. And I think like I just always kind of attached to that.
Yeah.
I've never talked about this before in an interview, so I guess I'll bring it up. But one of the real like defining moments in my life was, I was at a show when I was a kid, probably 12 years old, in my hometown, San Diego, and at our local venue is called Ground Zero. And there was a spoken word artist that played, in between a couple of bands, and he was actually like on that tour package.
Yep.
you know, reminds me of like Trey.
Yeah.
Trey the Ruler. Yeah.
That's exactly what I was thinking of.
Yeah. So it was kind of like that kind of figure. And his name was Bradley Hathaway.
Okay.
He's actually pretty positive, you know, his stuff's on Spotify and all this good stuff.
Okay, cool. But Bradley Hathaway.
Yeah, when I was you know, young, I was kind of just like skeptical. I was like a little pissed off kid. And,
yeah.
You know, like child of divorce, and I was fresh. And so I was just like trying to find my place. And like just standing on the edge of this circle he had made in the floor, put his mic stand right in the middle of it, and he performed from the floor. And I thought that was so cool. By himself, you know, and he has this poem called The Hug Poem that he performed right after his poem called The Hardcore Poem.
And okay.
The Hardcore Poem starts out, it's just like super funny. It's like, I will spin kick you in the face, everybody back up. Just like just talking about the stereotypical hardcore tough guy.
Yes.
And then he brought in The Hug Poem right afterwards, and he had already kind of just like captured my attention, and he like came up to me and hugged me during The Hug Poem, during like one of the parts, and that always just stuck with me. It was like, I'll never forget Bradley Hathaway because of that moment when I was 12 and I needed it. So I think that's something that I've always thought of
as you basically now being your own Bradley Hathaway.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. If I'm that to someone in any capacity, like, I'm wholly honored and grateful for it. But I know.
Did you feel like because this person was able to kind of talk about both hardcore and hugging, like in the same, you know, 5 minute stretch, is that kind of, did that stick with you as like, as a 12-year-old being like, well, these are two, emotions that I feel, and maybe I can put these together.
Totally.
And that can be a way I can express myself.
Absolutely. Yes. And, seeing him, you know, perform so freely and then be so accepted by the bands that were on the tour, you know, who were like stood around the circle too, watching him.
Yeah.
I think that really resonated with me that, you know, this person could be wholly himself, be immersed in this scene, whatever it was at the time, and, you know, still be accepted by everyone. No matter what he talked about,
right.
Like, could very well be making fun of some of the guys on the tour. Like,
yeah, probably
like,
was
like,
yeah.
Just their, you know, maybe their personification, like their tough guy image or whatever. Yeah, I think that was huge in seeing that you can just, oh my gosh,
there's a full on spider. There's a full-on spider.
Shane has
me.
A spider attacking him right
it's
now.
Like, it's hanging down from a tree. We're under a tree in this courtyard, and no, it's okay.
It's retreating.
I'm not scared of spiders like some people. Some people would flip out.
Yeah, it's moving back up the web, and we're safe.
Look, I'm literally like a billion times bigger than it. What could it do to me? Why are people scared of bugs?
I don't know.
Anyways, wow, we really went off track.
That was a tangent. Get out of here, spider. But yeah, I think seeing that at such a young age really, kind of just like set it in my head.
So what were you doing at a hardcore show when you're 12 years old? Like, there must be some kind of story.
Sure.
You know, of how you got started in that. Was it an older brother or sister or something like that? Or
it's actually, I have an older brother. He's 12 years older than me. So he was already kind of, you know, an adult doing his own thing.
Yeah.
While I was going through all of this, you know, dealing with my parents' separation, he was still living at home. Dealing with my parents' divorce in his own way.
Right. Of course.
And, you know, dealing with his own like kind of anger and angst, and so I didn't really like connect with my brother at that moment about that whole thing. So I was searching for, you know, another way. I, you know, grew up in a Christian household, and so I pretty much just kind of immersed myself in like youth groups, like not just, you know, maybe for whatever, you know, like transcendent thing I might be getting out of it. And it was more just about, you know, community. Like,
yeah.
I had my world rocked, a few like close friends, but I didn't really have like a core. I was going to a new middle school, all this different stuff. So I was really just searching, and I found that community in this youth group. One of the leaders of the group, his name was Casey, and we're still extremely good friends to this day. He was 18 at the time. I was 12, 13. And he kind of just saw me, because we talked about this as I've grown up.
Yep.
He saw me, and he said he saw a lot of himself in me, in him. And he knew that if he didn't at least try to bring me in, you know, to some kind of like community, if not just like a friendship with him.
Like take you under his wing.
Sure, exactly. Like he saw the two paths,
yeah.
You know,
yep.
Like, and he chose to intervene and befriend me.
Yeah.
So, he was the first to take me to a show, and it was like his band playing at that venue, Ground Zero, that I was talking about. And I was hooked. Like he was able to, you know, convince my parents, all this different stuff. Like, I remember my mom coming into my room when I was like 11 playing, you know, POD Fundamental Elements of Southtown, and was like, "What is this devil music?"
And, right, yeah, right.
And you know, she just didn't get it at the time. Now she's like, Amon Amarth is like one of her favorite bands, and she's like,
"Oh,
this
cool.
is like metalhead and whatever." But yeah, at the time, she was coming out of her own conservatism and just didn't get it.
Right.
So that kind of, you know, spurred me on a little bit more too, to get into it, because, you know, it wasn't quite liked by the parents.
It was a little bit rebellious.
Sure. Yeah. It was a little bit of rebellion with a lot of community. So great. It's like, I started going to shows because I just got so wrapped up in the energy and the community that I saw there. And so it was kind of like this little loophole, and Ground Zero was run by, you know, a big church. So it was like,
right.
Just as like a community center. So I had all these excuses, you know, like, I want to go see this, you know, this metal band. Like, I saw Job for a Cowboy the first time there, in front of like 40 people. So it was like, I had this guy, you know, is like, I get to go, see these crazy bands, but it's at a Christian venue with my buddy who I met at youth group,
right.
And who's a leader there, and all this different stuff. So that was my in, you know.
Sure.
So like, that got me in the door, and then I was able to, you know, build friendships with, granted, these older people. So like Casey's whole friend group, who was in his bands with, and all this different stuff. They all kind of did the same and took me under their wing, you know, treated me like an equal, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that's just what made me latch on, is, you know, realizing that community can be achieved in, you know, dark rooms, loud music playing.
Right. Exactly. That's something I think, you know, I hate to use the word more normal people, but like the average person doesn't understand that.
Right.
They just see the loudness and the black clothes and, you know, piercings and tattoos
and
yeah. And sometimes they see violence,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, so it is hard for people to understand. So it's funny. Yeah. You talk about how you were able to do it in the name of, like, you were able to do this in the name of like Christianity or religion,
sure.
or something was
sure.
like what enabled you to do it, which is interesting, because I know you're still a religious person. It's still important to you. So it's kind of funny how it's, you know, still a part of your life. And it's funny for me, and I'm going to relate this to myself also, because I want to get a little bit back to the whole, you know, you standing in the crowd, you know, at a House of Blues.
Totally.
Which is something a lot of bands don't do.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what I'm working up to. And I mean, you know, having a sense of community, you know, in a, you know, youth group and, you know, learning about hardcore and all this stuff, and having this scene of these local bands and stuff in the San Diego area. See, that happened where I grew up too, in Toronto.
Sure.
You know, we had local halls. Some of them were in churches. It was a secular scene for the most part. We didn't really have a lot of Christian bands, and mm-hmm. even the shows in churches, they were pretty secular, actually.
Sure.
Like, I remember one time they have in between bands, like a pastor like started speaking, and it got a little awkward, you know,
yeah,
because it wasn't that kind of a thing. But we still had that sense of community.
Totally.
And I think these days, a lot of that is lost. I think a lot of the younger bands coming up are from places that didn't have that, totally. Or don't have that.
Yeah.
And they don't really understand what seeing a band in front of 20 people with a singer jumping around, or
yeah,
as you described, Bradley Hathaway is his name,
yep.
as he, you know, what he did,
yeah.
and that stuff they can't relate to.
Sure.
So now, being as Ocean, you know, you guys start, like you said, used to play in front of like 0 to 20 kids,
mm-hmm.
and it grew and it grew and it grew,
mm-hmm.
but you've still kept the same ideology.
Right.
Now, bringing this to the masses and playing bigger and bigger shows, is this something that you're scared of? Or is this something that you guys embrace? Like, because for a lot of bands, like, especially, you know, hardcore bands, there becomes a point when it's not, like, cool anymore.
Hmm.
You know, you get too big and then you're not cool.
Sure.
And you almost get smaller because you got bigger.
Yeah.
So sure. I'm kind of wondering what your take is on that, and if it doesn't matter to you, or if you ever think about that.
I hadn't ever really thought of it to that extent, but I think what our mindset has always been is, we're just going to continue to like do what we do and what feels best for us, like whether it's writing or performing, and then wherever that goes, we'll be fine with it. Like going into something with no expectation, just knowing that I can trust the now like 3 permanent members with me in this band to do the things that they've always done that have worked and that have, you know, felt right.
Right.
And then, you know, like tried not to worry about too much of what other people think. And then hopefully, you know, the people that'll get it will latch onto it and, you know, do what they want with it.
Right. Well, you talk about the other permanent members of your band, and like, haven't you known Tyler and Ralph like since you were a little kid too?
Yeah.
Like, were they around in the 12-year-old days?
Yep. I met Tyler a little bit after I met Ralph, but it's kind of funny. Our first rhythm guitarist name was Jacob Prest, and Jacob and I have known each other since we were born. Like, our parents were friends. There was never really a time where I didn't know Jacob. He was always just part of my consciousness. So when we started growing up, we never went to the same school, until later on in life, but he met Ralph because he was going to school with Ralph. And then, you know, I'm starting to go to all these shows and take Jacob, and he's liking it and all this stuff. And so I started talking about, you know, like I see these guys doing this stuff. I want to start playing music, but I like can't play an instrument. So I want to scream. Like I just,
right.
So he started talking to Ralphie, who had played, I think Ralph's played bass since he was like 9 or 10, just like taking lessons at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so Jacob talked to Ralph and was like, you know, I have this friend, he wants to start a band, blah, blah, blah. You want to come over and just jam. So like,
and how old are you at this point?
Probably 13 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so Ralph came over to my house and, you know, started just practicing in our garage, and like slowly a friendship started to form there. And Ralph had been, you know, going to school with Tyler and knew that Tyler wanted to start something too, all this stuff. I knew of Tyler just roundabout because he was a year older than me. So he was going to the same church, like,
okay,
same youth groups, but he had already like moved up to the high school group. I was still in the middle school groups, whatever, when I met him. So he was trying to start a band, we were trying to start a band, and then we kind of just like merged our two bands, and that became our first one. where we actually started playing shows.
Yeah. And you were 13.
Yeah. Probably closer to like 14, 15.
What were
this
you guys
time.
Called?
The Betrayal.
Nice.
Yeah. We had, you know, like
very biblical undertones there. I like this.
Oh yeah, totally. So we had like the typical kid band scenario where we had, you know, a guitarist, but then we had a keyboardist and two screamers and all this different stuff. And none of us really knew how to play our instruments except yeah. maybe Ralph and Tyler. Yeah. And Shad, our first drummer in Being As an Ocean,
yes.
was actually in that band too. And that's when we met him. So like we had all kind of grown up with each other, just playing music yeah. in different bands, trying different things. After that band, we had another, you know, local San Diego band that lived for a while. And then we all, you know, became adults.
Yep.
And we're like, you know, kind of just want to like sever this tie to childhood and try something, you know, for our first stab at a real.
So how
adult
long did the
band.
Betrayal last?
The Betrayal lasted
like through high school, kind of,
even less. It was like, the Betrayal probably lasted about 2 years. And then we started a band called Vanguard, and that lived until the time I was about 18.
Yep.
18 years old, 19 years old maybe. And that was cool. We played awesome shows in San Diego, and we were really, you know, excited about it. Oh, the spider's back. The spider is back, everyone.
And I wish we could where'd it go? Uh-oh.
Oh, he's still here.
Okay, good.
Right above Shane's.
I'm the one saying I'm not scared of spiders, and then I'm like, where'd he go?
he's again retreating back up the web.
No, I'm also drinking a very lovely drink called a Schwipschwap right
Schwip
now. Schwipschwap, which is cola and orange, which you think might be something special. It's literally just Coke and Orange Fanta mixed together.
Cool. Anyways, there you go.
You got a sparkling water or a regular?
Going with the au naturel there.
Isn't it amazing here how they just love their sparkling water all the time?
Mineralwasser, yeah.
Why do they want to drink that all the time?
I don't know. I think it might just be a cultural thing. Anyone German listening to this podcast could probably let us know.
Every time I ask a German, they just say, I think it's nice.
I think it tastes better.
Well, all right. Okay, yeah. Sure. That's fine.
It's kind of like drinking a soda without drinking a soda.
Yeah.
You're getting the bubbles, you know?
I guess. Yeah. I'm drinking the bubbles all the time. I just feel like that can't be good for you.
At least for myself, it'd be gassy.
Yeah.
And, you know, then like we're on stage and we're burping and stuff. It's just not a good look.
Exactly. I don't know. Yeah. anyways, back to the big long story of how you kind of got here. So then that's when you guys decided at some age we're gonna take this seriously, and you guys just bought a van basically.
Yeah, we
and you were Being As an Ocean at this point when you first kind of took your first stab at being a touring band,
right? We actually kind of just, you know, took the time to it was funny because all of our friends were so like pressuring us for about a year, like, what the hell's going on with your band? Like, when are you guys putting out new stuff? And they were like, no, it's like, this band's done. We're starting something different.
Right.
Like, we're just going to keep quiet about it. We don't want anyone, you know, like we were kind of, you know, even if it was like, who would hear, but we were all very, you know, secretive about it all. We rented out, Tyler rented out a studio on Park and Market downtown in San Diego. So the little one bedroom studio apartment. And we spent the summer of 2011 recording there. You know, just did our thing, wrote the whole Dear God album, recorded vocals at Tyler's house in his upstairs closet, all this good stuff, sent it out to Brian Hood to be mixed and mastered. And then we actually, you know, Tyler's girlfriend at the time had started, you know, doing photography and videography and stuff like this. So we went out. Thank God San Diego has a bunch of beautiful places to shoot.
Right.
But we went out to Sunset Cliffs, shot the song Dear God as a music video, and, you know, kind of just waited. And then we set up a DIY tour through connections that we had gotten through Daniel Wand of Capsize, because mm-hmm. they had already been, you know, like out and doing DIY touring with an earlier lineup. And Matt Fitzpatrick from Iron Lung,
of course, literally yeah. wearing a Iron Lung shirt right now.
This is, it's awesome. It's full circle. Cause Matt, is from near where we live. And so we had all these little, you know, DIY connections. Yeah. So we were playing, you know, wherever we could, little church halls, like community centers, VFWs, everything, anything that would have us basically, just let us, you know, set up a table for merch.
Sure.
And so we set out on this very ambitious, that was our third tour we did. The first tour was a couple weeks long up and down the West Coast. And the day we left to play our first show in Las Vegas, we never even played a local show before that.
Really?
Yeah. We knew that if we were going to be a touring band, we had to start playing on tour. And so we scheduled our first show.
Your first show was in Las Vegas.
January 3rd, 2012, Las Vegas, Nevada.
Well, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
wild.
We sat in the van for about, I don't know, 4 hours maybe outside of our drummer's house while Dear God uploaded to YouTube. And then once it finally uploaded, we drove out to Las Vegas, played the first show.
It's crazy.
So like,
cause you guys have this like interesting, like I won't stop you before when you're talking, but the story is compelling. Like when you were talking about Tyler, like you just made a record and rented a bedroom apartment and recorded it. And like, I'm just thinking to myself, like how the fuck do a bunch of 20-year-old kids that have never really been in a serious band before, yeah. how do they know how to do that?
Tyler had always done our recording at production.
So he's just a bit of a nerd with that stuff. Like totally. Literally right now in the dressing room, he's like doing something on Logic with headphones yeah. on. Literally
yeah.
right now.
Yeah.
So that's just him, I guess.
It is.
Yeah, because seeing that, I'm just like, I think thinking about that, I'm like, how do you just do that? And then how do you just know, like that's crazy to me to do that, you know? Like,
yeah. Spider's back.
Like you guys had...
Just let it bite you support? And maybe you can become maybe. Spider-Man.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
No, but how did you guys afford to do this? Did you guys have, were you guys working? Did you guys just have like parents that you could borrow money from or
definitely. We all had our like full-time jobs.
Yeah.
I left high school early cause I was like, fuck this. I need to get out.
Mm-hmm.
Just very, very antsy, as a student my senior year. So I graduated high school about 6 months earlier than everyone else, and had been working. I worked at Starbucks for about 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
From the time I turned 16, literally could go out and find a job. I went to Starbucks, got my first job, worked there, saving up as much money as I possibly could. You know, trying to spend a little bit of money on like going to community college, really realizing it was just,
not for you.
Not for me. I won't say a waste of time because yeah. it's not.
Well, that's the thing. But, though, you have to be careful too. Like a person in your position,
right?
Being the, I keep going back to the Bradley Hathaway, you know, but like, sure. you know, you can be impressionable to people. Mm. So saying like high school is a waste of time, college is a waste of time. Like you got to be a bit careful with that stuff.
No, of course.
Cause it's not a waste of time for everybody.
No.
And there's definitely people that need it.
That need it.
A lot of people
function
that need
well
it.
In it.
Yes. That can be successful and can
absolutely
and can live an uplifting life.
Of course. Yes. And yeah. I'm jealous of those people. Because like, sure. I wish I had, I guess I'll just chalk it up, you know, to, you know, I wish I had the patience,
right.
In that situation in which I was like, okay, I'll just be patient and, you know, just bite the bullet, you know, sit in the class and do my 2 years, get an associate's, and then go do this thing. But I kind of was just always, you know, driven towards something else. And
yep.
I guess I always think about the cartoon. I'm sure you've seen it. It's pretty popular, but it's like a row of different kinds of animals. You know, there's like an elephant, there's a monkey, there's you know, a bird, all these different things, and then there's a tree, and it's someone telling all of them, hey, go climb that tree. Like some people aren't going to be good at, you know, where they are in their life.
Yes.
Or equipped enough to do that thing.
Exactly.
And
no, I haven't seen that before. That's, I like that though. Oh. Yeah.
So that was kind of just like a parody on standardized testing.
Exactly.
So, all that aside, chose to just work, and we had, you know, always taken it very seriously, like X amount of dollars from every member every month in the band bank account.
Cool.
So, and, you know, in the beginning, a little bit about Tyler is Tyler was the kid who, you know, was studious, and, you know, all the while we were playing, you know, local shows, things like that, he was going to school in places like Stanford. He was going to school in yeah. places like University of Chicago and flying to play a SOMA show.
Crazy.
Yeah. So this is like, and he was all the while tutoring people, making money that way, to kind of just like whenever we needed it, do little bankrolls for the band.
Right.
So like huge appreciation and shout out to Tyler for that.
Yeah.
So not only was Tyler, you know, extremely studious, he graduated from the University of Chicago with a degree in mathematics and quantum mechanics.
Yeah.
So smart guy.
Yeah.
And so he's always been very tech savvy, very creative and musical, and that all kind of just like coalesced in what he is now.
Right.
And so there's a great example of
it working out.
Of it working out.
Yeah.
Totally.
Of being, you know, getting good grades in school, being important, and being able to be, you know, to be a very successful musician.
Mm-hmm.
and very talented musician. Yeah, that's amazing. I guess that's kind of a cool thing that in your band you have this guy that's sort of smart and put together, kind of, you know, and
oh, he's always been
right,
our suit,
right? Yes. Yeah. And then there's you, who is just sort of this ball of aggression, you know. And then you have Michael too, which is a whole, you know, other, you know, you guys have a lot going on.
Sure.
You know, if anyone hasn't seen Being Is an Ocean, listen to this, that you got to check them out. And you know, you mentioned about going in the crowd a lot.
Yeah.
That's something you've always done.
Mm-hmm.
Is that? Have you ever played a show where they've said you can't go in the crowd? Has that ever happened? Like you have to stay on the stage.
I feel like if they had, I would have remembered it.
So no.
So I don't think so. I think
you must have been yelled at though.
Totally. Oh my god. Yes. I've been like
kicked out of venues.
You know,
band.
Like climbing on stuff, and you know, like I know I try to be smart about my antics, you know.
Yeah.
I try not to climb on like sprinkler heads and like water mains that are lining the roof or anything like that, but
sure.
You know, just like hanging from a rafter and security trying to like rip me down from it and all this stuff. So like that's happened. I mean I've been shouted at like so many times for, you know, breaking, you know, mic cables, all this different stuff, all the little things that happen.
Yeah.
When do something
have
extra
you guys been
like
banned
that.
From any venues?
Yeah. We've been banned from San Diego House of Blues.
Oh yeah.
Because we played the small room, and if anyone's been there, they know that there's a giant chandelier that hangs in the that
I've
room.
Been in the small room, I don't think.
And basically, like the craziest thing I did all night was there's like a little wall that separates where you store gear
yeah.
and the crowd.
Yeah.
I just climbed the wall, you know, did my normal thing, you know, jumped in the crowd, whatever. But I think the whole energy of the show was really ramping up. Like security just didn't, at one point in the show, I think they kind of just like backed off and put their hands up and were like, whatever happens, it's on them. But yeah, someone got up on the same wall and jumped to the chandelier.
Oh.
And was and actually like hung on the chandelier and was like swinging. So
it wasn't even you.
It wasn't even me. It was just kind of us, I guess. The whole energy.
Yeah.
Because, you know, within reason, we try to encourage freedom in our shows.
Sure.
So yeah, I don't think we will be playing a House of Blues show in San Diego for
okay.
a long time.
Okay. What was my next part of the question? Oh yeah, part two of the question is: have you ever been on tour with a band and had like the headlining band be like, "Hey, you guys are like upstaging us" or anything like that? Being like, because I've had that happen before. I was told I wasn't allowed to go in the crowd or go on the like on the barricade or whatever. Climb the barricade. I was told before I was not allowed.
Yeah,
I won't say what band, but okay, so you ever had that happen?
No, you know I've been very. You know, obviously very grateful that because I mean it can happen and like I'm very grateful that we've been able to tour with bands that you know kind of just dig
that
it
are cool yeah
instead of you know feeling like they should stop me
there's
doing
some
it
kind of competition or whatever
right and like that's been like the quiet blessing of our band, I think, and the bands we've gotten to tour with is that they're very few egos,
yeah,
and like I love that because you know I like we've been around long enough to see the egos,
right,
and go oh my god if I was on tour with that for a month I don't know what I'd do, you know, so yeah, just very very grateful. That no one's
absolutely
know, tried to, you know, stop me from doing whatever I want.
Yeah. Are there ever shows too though where you get out there and maybe you're not having the best day or you're sick, or you're tired, and you're just like, they're gonna expect me to be, you know, Joel in the crowd and like, you know what? Tonight I'm going to be a little more chill.
There have
Does
been
ever
no
happen?
Shows.
And then you're like, kind of like, fuck, this is like you've pigeonholed yourself into having to be this guy.
Sure.
Does that go ever happen to you?
There are nights where, like you said, it will be like, I'll be sick or just not feeling it, for myself.
Yeah.
And I've kind of, you know, tamed it down, like toned it back. Not been out in the crowd too much. Try to do little things here and there, to make up for it. But, and you know, sometimes it's noticed, sometimes it's not. I think, it reflects that I know that if I'm down in the crowd and I'm sick and I'm just not having it, like, I don't want me putting myself in the crowd to make myself upset or,
sure.
or like frustrated.
Right.
So, I don't want to put that on people.
No.
So, yeah, I just try to be mindful of my headspace and where I'm at, how I'm feeling. And then, yeah, I always kind of, we're all our own worst critic and I can beat myself up, you know, after the show, but you know, those are fairly far between.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. You ever get hurt in the crowd? Like people just kind of like, you know, you're a pretty big dude, I guess.
Sure.
I'm a little dude. If I go in the crowd, I can get squashed pretty easily. But you know, just like somebody not trying to hurt you. I'm just swinging, like, excited. And someone swings an arm and catches you, you know, upside of the head. Has that happened to you?
Totally. Got in the mic, you know, mic grill to the mouth.
Yeah.
Like, bloody mouth. You know, like,
Any show canceling injuries?
No, thank God.
Oh wow. Yeah, you've been very lucky.
Yeah, super lucky. The only like real kind of inhibiting things have just been like my ankles. Like, it sounds so lame, but you know, like, getting caught up in a crowd,
like just twisting it
super bad, and like having someone step on it, like while it's twisting and all that stuff. And that's happened a few times. I'll get over it. But, I've thank God nothing, no bones broken or anything like that. Just, little bang ups here and there.
That's good, man. Yeah. So, okay. You guys recently signed to Equal Vision.
Yeah.
Great label.
I love them.
Love Dan.
He's one of my favorite people. God, he's just like a Buddha.
He's a Red Sox fan, whatever, but he's a sweetheart. And actually a lot of people don't know this, but before Silverstein signed with Hopeless, we were actually very close to signing with Equal Vision.
Oh, wow. Cool.
And they're one of my favorite, like as a kid, they had all my favorite bands.
Totally.
You know, with like Converge and Saves the Day and they had everybody. It's awesome.
Yeah.
So how did that come about? I guess you guys finished up your deal with Invogue and now you're on Equal Vision. And what's the plan there? You guys have a record I expect to come out. That's probably what Tyler's doing in there.
Yep. We're writing it currently. Since we just put out Dissolve, we wanted to make sure we didn't give people something and then just have this long hiatus.
Because the last couple records were pretty quick, weren't they?
Very quick.
I mean, like between the time.
Sure.
About a
year in between each release, which we are not going to be doing. Let me reiterate, not going to be doing ever again. not because we felt that, you know, the record suffered in any way, because we love all of our music. You know, I'm very proud of every single album, but we just know that the longer we allow ourselves to be creative, there are things that we, you know, will come about that couldn't have in a year.
I totally get that.
Mm-hmm. So,
I mean, not to mention, like, you want to support, like, you want to get the music that you love, that you made.
Yeah.
You need to be able to go out on tour and share it with people.
Yep.
And you need to promote it properly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a year to not only do that, but also write and record a new record and put it out.
Dude.
It's just not enough time.
No. Not at all.
No.
So, I think that's kind of something we learned a bit with the last one. Our self-titled that we released right before Warped Tour. I was talking to someone the other day and they were, you know, talking heavily about the first two albums. And he's like, when are you going to come out with something new? And I was like, well, we just released, a single, but, if you haven't heard our like third album, and he's like, you have a third album? And I didn't even know.
Self-titled. Yeah.
So, you get things
quick.
Like that.
Yeah. It's way too quick. Totally. It's crazy. Wow, yeah, no, that's not... So you guys are working on it now, writing it now.
Yep.
And any idea of when you're going to record it and when it's going to come out?
We have another single being mixed and mastered right now.
Yep.
And then we have another song coming out very, very soon. And then the scheduled release for the new album is like early next year.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. So. That should be great. And you guys, you guys are pretty much the kind of band, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're pretty much either writing, recording, or touring.
Yes.
Do you guys ever take any time just to be like, hey, we're going to chill for like a few months, or not really?
Well, I think the longest time we had to just hang out this last year was probably about a month and a half, bordering on 2 months.
Yeah.
And that was awesome. But I think what we've kind of just gone into these first 5 years as a band knowing was that, like, it's going to be work.
Sure.
You know, like, so we kind of just, like, clicked into that mindset and just never stopped. So, like, even on that long break, we kind of all came back, and I know I see Ralph a lot when I'm home. Tyler's living in Paris now,
yeah,
so he's he's a bit scarce, but Ralph and I, you know, see each other 3-4 times a week when we're home. So we talk all the time, and we're just like, man, I'm just getting restless. So you go back out.
Right, you know, right. Like, you're like, remember that time we were in Lindau and we went swimming in the lake? You know,
sure.
Things like that that come up, and yes, you get a little stir crazy at home, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. And you know, I'm sure you can relate. It's just like the whole ebb and flow of touring and in your day, you know,
yep.
the relaxing, you know, parts of the day mixed in with insane amounts of action and adrenaline and all this different stuff mixed in your night, getting you all hopped up, like, and when that's gone, and you know, 9:30 p.m. hits and you're at home, I know I, like, even if I'm by myself, I'm like tapping my leg, I'm like looking around, like I gotta be somewhere, like what's right. going on, you know. It might be like,
it's interesting. That's something that I don't think we have talked too much about on this podcast. Like,
it's almost like shell shock.
Yeah, bit. I mean, yeah, I don't know what that is. It's just like you're almost like addicted to this this feeling of going on stage and performing, and then like all of a sudden, because like for Silverstein, we've had like the last 3 months off. I've like literally been sitting in my apartment by myself.
Yeah.
You're right, man. Mm. Like when that isn't there, when you're so used to doing it, and then it's just gone. Going. Yeah, you get a little stir crazy, and
I deal with that a lot.
Yeah, yeah. We talk about lyrics quite a bit on this podcast, but not as much as I would like to.
Sure.
And it's funny because as a singer, like, you know, I'm a guitar player first, so I started playing guitar. I never really was interested in singing.
Sure.
And I kind of did it just because I was the only one that could kind of carry a tune. And then, so for me, like, I'd say even now, like, lyrics is down on the totem pole of like my favorite parts of being in a band, writing lyrics. And I feel like for you, and I could be wrong, it's more of the top for you.
Yeah.
And totally. Part of it is because, you know, what inspired you was a spoken word artist.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
What inspired me was like, you know, Kirk Hammett playing a sick solo,
right?
You know, so we come from different walks of life, but
sure,
for me, actually, over the last, I'm going to say 5 years, maybe 5-6 years, I've felt like I got a lot better at writing lyrics, and I started enjoying it a lot more.
Sure.
And I think lyrics in your band are probably the most important part of the band, and I'm sure that you feel they're the most important part of your job of the band.
Yeah.
So I just want to get your take on how you approach it, and just kind of where do you come up with what you come up with, and how do you try to express that?
Sure. Well, I think my emphasis on lyrics kind of just spawned from, because it wasn't always that way. I always tried to be creative in our earlier bands and things like that. And, you know, I was, you know, quite ambitious towards writing lyrics that I thought were interesting and or compelling in some way. But it wasn't until I was, you know, in high school, it was my sophomore year, and my English teacher had been grading, you know, we were meant to write poems.
Yeah.
And I never really did the poetry thing. I kind of just a lot of the stuff I'd written before was very kind of just free versey. I like, it was funny thinking back, it's like I really kind of just despise rhyming. It's like,
yeah,
for whatever reason. And then
it can be cheesy.
Sure.
You know,
yeah,
and the problem with rhyming, and like I've taught a couple songwriting courses and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with rhyming is if you try to use, especially like perfect rhymes,
yeah,
like cheese and sneeze, you know, and cheese sneeze. And sneeze and stuff like that. Then what happens is instead of you writing the song starts to write you.
Right. Oh, it's totally.
And then all of a sudden it's like, why totally am I true. Rhyming these words? That, like, you get a great first line,
right?
And then by the end of the 4-line verse or whatever, you're like, this isn't even what I wanted to write anymore.
Right.
So I like that you say despise rhyming, because I totally agree with you.
Yeah. And so I, you know, I tried my hand at, you know, poetry. And my teacher just kind of like give me really awesome feedback.
Wow.
And I actually just saw her recently in San Diego and stopped her. She was at a Starbucks. I stopped her. I was like, I have to say, you know, like, it's so good to see you. Like, I've been wanting to tell you this for years.
Did like, you like
you?
You haven't seen her since high school?
No.
So you got this beard and tattoos, yeah, and she's like, "Who is this guy?"
Yeah. And she
I just picture that.
She's sweet. She actually stayed pretty up on us through another friend of mine.
Oh, cool.
Who is actually student teaching at my high school that we went to high school at right now. So like through all these different connections. She didn't lose, you know, too much track of me, and she just knew what I was about. So, I was talking to her, and I was just like, I have to share this with you, you know, like, I do this thing now because you gave me the courage to try. Like, you gave me the courage to try and continue expressing myself through, you know, poetry, lyrics, writing.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously she was very humble and grateful for it. We had a nice chat, but that was the big turning point. It's like someone in academia,
yeah,
saying, "You're not half bad," you know?
Right. Like, it's funny because our whole conversation before about
school
not being something you could do, and but it turns out it was important.
Oh yeah,
you know,
and school was always important to me. I guess it was me, daydreaming.
Yeah,
in a lower or a community college classroom that kind of like gummed up my works, I guess. But I was always a very ambitious student in high school and in, you know, it was like A's, B's, C's.
Mm-hmm.
So I always tried to do my best, and this is the only reason I was able to graduate early. And
right.
So like, very, very important to me. But it was her inspiring me. It was good teachers.
Yeah.
That made me love to learn certain things. And that just stuck with me. Really, really just did.
And so your approach to lyric writing now, I mean, like is there anything that you do, or is it like you kind of just sort of free verse it now? Like is every song different? Do you have a similar approach?
Yeah, I think every song is a bit different. I've embraced my rhyme. I've embraced to an extent.
Yeah. You know,
obviously there's overkill. But I've tried to in both lyrics and other writings that I've done and do not limit myself too much and like you said, not let the material write me.
Yes.
And just try to be honest with myself. That's like what the majority of being As an Ocean's lyrics are about, me. And my life dealing with my shit.
Mm-hmm.
Life's not perfect. We all have feelings, all that good stuff. Most of the lyrics are about me trying to, you know, get a handle on the things that are happening around me. And inside my own head, cause I'm like that a lot as well. I live very much in my own head, and I think that's always just been my escape, is, you know, spitting it out on a piece of paper. And so I think for like moving forward, at least with the lyrics in this band, I'm wanting to open it up, and, you know, I'm sick of talking about myself.
It's like, right.
So we're actually, you know, starting to be more collaborative. Each member is going to write a song. Lyrics. Mm-hmm. That's something new we're going to start doing with this album, and just see where it takes us. But as far as myself goes, just try and delve into different things, you know, going back to, you know, like writing freeform and free verse, and you know, I've been writing a short story.
Oh yeah,
doing little things like that.
Are you going to try to publish it?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
if I, you know, get my ass in gear and finish.
Yeah, it's not easy. I've sure. done a little bit of that, and I always just kind of flake out because it is like way more work.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, than writing a song. I mean, I sit there on my couch struggling to write one line, like writing an entire, I mean, even just a short story is, wow, that's a lot of words to put on a paper, piece of paper.
Yeah. But, trying to just continue to go back to, you know, the things like you brought up, you know, inspiring, or like, influences that I've had over the years.
Yeah.
You know, like going back to those things and really kind of like trying to listen to them again with a fresh ear and say like, what makes this so great to me? And, you know, how can I kind of implement that in my own life? Whether, whether it's, you know, a certain like structure or, you know, a different idea or, you know, like a way the singer related to himself or herself.
Yeah.
Like all that trying to push myself forward to become better.
Do you find now that Big as Notion has such a rabid fan base and people are so, you know, coming up to you every day and telling you how much their lyrics, your lyrics mean to them.
Mm.
Does that ever change your approach in how you write them? Or does it almost solidify the fact that you are doing it right and you need to keep doing it the same way?
It's definitely a mix. I think the word that comes most to mind is responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Being responsible with the words I choose to say and do and like write. Because... you know, where it was just me trying to deal with my own stuff. Now, as much as we try to, you know, forget it and like block it all out while we're writing and stuff, you know, there are impressionable kids, you know, taking this stuff in.
Yes.
And, you know, I see more and more, you know, as we continue touring and doing all these different things, seeing artists not being responsible with their words and, you know, seeing young kids singing it right back to them. And I'm like, that's in their heads. It's on their hearts. Like, does that make the world better? You know what I mean?
Of course I know what you mean. Yeah.
So,
right.
That's the little, that's the half responsibility. And then, the other thing is honesty. And I know you know when, like, we can see right through something when it's dishonest, when it's forced. And that's the other, I think, major pressure is continuing to be honest and real and scare myself a little bit with what I'm writing, so that I stay true to myself. Because everyone's going to see right through it if I vary.
Well, that goes all the way back around to Being as an Ocean, being this band, you know, winning the Alternative Press Award for Best Underground Band, which, you know, is just such a funny thing. But at the same time, I think you guys are able to grow. You guys are able to do different tours that you probably wouldn't. You know, like, you guys would do a Rise Against tour.
Yeah.
Or you guys would do, like, you guys would do a tour with, like, a big band like that.
Sure.
And it would be great for you guys, but a lot of people that listen to your band would be like, oh, like, now my favorite band isn't going to be.
Right. Yeah, sure.
But at the end of the day, if you can be honest about the words you're writing and the lyrics, you know, because people will see through it. And as long as it's honest, then I think the trajectory of whatever you guys choose to do will be great. And I think that that's the real difference between a band that gets bigger and a band that sells out.
Sure.
Because people want to use those words interchangeably, and then it's not true. So,
yeah.
That's my take.
Thank you, man.
I don't know what you think. You say you don't think about it very much.
I try not to. I really don't. Like, I try to just live every single day right where I am.
Right.
Play the fucking show. Like,
even if it's your face on a giant video screen that says like Coca-Cola above it, because you know in some of these European festivals, oh, that's what happens.
Yeah,
and you're just like, I'm on TV. This is weird.
Yeah, totally. And taking you know, like you said, just not only living consistently, you know, around your friends, but living consistently around everyone. And I think that says a lot to our guys. And the only reason I've stayed such good friends and in bands with these people is because I've been there through all of it. And they've always been Ralph. They've always been Tyler.
Yeah.
You know, now Mike's always been Mike. Like, I don't have to wake up in the morning and worry, you know, how they're going to treat me or how they're going to treat everyone else. Like, it's just who they are.
Yeah.
And I think whether you're that with Rise Against or you're that with, you know, Trash Talk.
Right.
Like, that's the important part, is being authentic.
I agree. And to quote Suicidal Tendencies.
Hell yeah.
They said one time, I saw this on, I was a little kid watching, you know, Much Music, Canadian MTV. And they were like, some people say, you know, bands get bigger and they change, you know, they get into bad stuff like women and drugs. We've always been into that.
No, we've always been into women and drugs.
Yeah. It's funny though, right?
No, how, it's like, great. How,
and like, that's totally there's that whole thing about, oh man, you've changed, man. It's like, I don't really think people change. I think people are just, some people just become a caricature of themselves.
Sure.
Yeah, if you're, you know, that kind of person that's like, you know, women and drugs and all that shit, then when you get more ability to do that, you're going to do more of it.
Sure.
But at the same time, if you're not that person, you can be even more humble.
Yeah, sure.
Even more grounded.
Yeah. It's like,
I don't know how the analogy works the other way, but,
right.
But I really do believe that I don't think people change all that much.
And I think, I
don't think people become shitty people overnight because they become famous or popular or get money or whatever.
Sure. And I think it's kind of funny when those things are said too, because you got to look at the people who are saying them. Like, most of the time, it's people who are completely outside of not only like your tiny world of friends, or your you know, maybe a little bit bigger world of people you work with, people you tour with, all this different stuff. It's coming from people who are completely on the outskirts of your life, looking in, and you know, making this overarching statement about you and your being and your person, like when they really have nothing to say to it. You know, like if Ralphie goes to me one day, dude, you fucking changed. I need to fix my shit.
Right.
I need to like backtrack and realize where I went wrong, because Ralph's been my best friend, or one of my best friends, you know, since I was a kid.
Right.
Now, if some kid, you know, YouTube account, like, says something on our new music video that we've changed and that, you know, we're sellouts and all this different stuff, and they don't even, you know, like, take a chance on a show.
Sure.
It's like, I love you, guy, but your opinion doesn't, it's not founded. It's not grounded in any way, in any sort of truth, you know? It's just your fantasy opinion.
It's just like your opinion, man. That's right. No, man, I totally get what you're saying, and that's great. Well, hey, I don't want to take too much of your time. I think we got dinner to eat, maybe.
Yeah.
Probably time.
Thank you for your time.
Lovely sitting here,
Shane,
with you, though, man.
Oh, well, cheers, brother.
My time is nothing, dude. All I got is time.
That's right. All we got is time.
But thank you. Appreciate you.
I appreciate you.
So there it is, my conversation with Joel of Being as an Ocean. Just a great guy, and it was so nice to run into him, you know, randomly in Lindau, Germany, which is one of Europe's best-kept secrets for sure.
Thank you so, so much. If you like this episode, remember, we got 34 episodes kind of similar to it. So go back, check out some of the old episodes. And also, if you really like the show, if you can write a review on iTunes, preferably 5 stars, write some nice words, that would also help us out a lot. As always, we'll be back next Monday with a brand new episode. And thanks again so much. I'm going to leave you with this brand new Being as an Ocean song. This is called Dissolve on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love.
The wind carries foam in cans recycled air, and the minstrels roam. Reunite body and mind. The walls left broken and crumbling. But oh, what did you expect? Gone for seasons at a time. Close my eyes to dream. Woke into it, have only lost the spring. 2 bags, cases, and hearts on our sleeves. We held them high so we could watch them bleed. Held them high so you could watch them bleed. Held them high so they could watch them bleed. In my touch.